Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast, where we're all about Commander, data, and dad jokes. I'm Joey Schultz, and I'm joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. Up first, he puts the gall in Galta, it's Matt Morgan.
So my partner's daughter asked me the other day, Matt, what does inconsequential mean? And I said, don't worry, girl, it's not that important.
it really isn't. I'm very happy at this turn of events, I guess. It seems of no major consequence, so I'm glad it went so swimmingly.
Hitherto, ergo vis-a-vis concordantly.
You can really tell that you're the son of an English teacher, can't you?
Very much so. Linguistics are on point.
There it is. All right. Up next, he puts the elder in Elder Dragon Highlander, and I can't even say that with a straight face. It's Dana Roach.
Now that Barcelona's over, we're kind of getting ready for Vegas, which is not too far away. I'm pretty hyped since we're all going to be there.
Yeah.
And something crazy almost always happens. Last time I was there, I saw the Dalai Lama, which makes no sense until you realize he does love Tibet.
Oh! Whoa! Oh, that one was... That was like a left hook of a dad joke. Wow. Okay.
It's a bit of a joke grenade. It took a sec, but eventually it goes off.
Matt, Dana's coming for your crowd.
I like the layers. Dana's got some onions going. There's lots of layers.
That was excellent. Oh, dang. All right. Well, hey, Matt, what are we talking about in this week's episode, though?
Well, we're going to take some time and kind of explain some frequently asked questions. We're going to give some time to answer those about what are some essential deck building resources that we use? How do we use the site? And what are some features of the site that maybe people don't really use all that much on edhrec.com? So it'll be an exciting episode.
Oh, yeah. Very, very informative. A lot of stuff that is going to, if you aren't using these tools yet, this is going to up your game for sure. That'll be very interesting. But we've got some shout outs we got to do first.
First, I'd like to thank Chase, also known as Mana Curves, for their help editing the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves.
We also wanted to let you know we'll be at the Magic Summit this year in Salt Lake City, October 26th to 29th. We had an absolute blast last year, and we hope to see you fine folks again this year. Come say hi and get in some games with us at the Magic Summit. And you may see us there in our Coalesce apparel Magic-themed merch, which you can also get. And no matter what you get from Coalesce, use code EDHREC at checkout for 10% off your order. They have all types of way cool designs from the Omnath Rock and Royal shirt to, of course, the EDH Rec collection, which you may see us sporting at the Magic Summit event. Once again, that's Coalesce and code EDH Rec for 10% off your order.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by liking and subscribing to this video on YouTube, subscribing to your local podcast app, or by going to patreon.com/EDH Reccast, where we have patron tiers of all sorts of levels, where for as little as $2 a month, you can get into our Discord channel. It's a great place, hang out with a good community, get some games in, or you can get the weekly patron shout out by going to patreon.com/edhrecast, which is exactly what Steve Abbott did. And that's why Steve Abbott is getting the very coveted weekly shout out. So Steve, I hear you're very good friends with a George Costello, I believe is his last name. You two make a really good pair, and I'm glad that you stopped by, Steve, and tell George to come over too. That'd be great.
Steve Abbott. I hope that you're watching Abbott Elementary, which is a very charming show.
Also very good, yes.
Well, thank you so, so much, Steve, for your support. We really do appreciate it. Really so, so. I know that we like to say it. I know it sounds like, oh, just a platitude. No, really, like the show does not happen without y'all. So seriously, it's just absolutely wonderful when people show their support that way. So thank you, Steve. And fellas, let's get into our main topic now. We're talking about some essential deck building tools, some EDH rec FAQ. Just all the letters of the alphabet. Matt, how about you start us off when it comes to some of the EDH reckoning that you do? Is there a specific reason that we wanted to talk about deck building tools on this episode today?
Well, one thing that I think we probably get the most questions about is how do I find cards or any given commander that's playing it also with X other card of the 99? And that's probably the easiest, but also it's hard to always kind of reinforce that this is probably the best tool that's on the site too. And it's called the Advanced Filters, where you can just go to any given commander's page. And if you look just to the right of the commander, you're going to see a little field there that's going to allow you to look at different cards. It says to include or exclude. There's all sorts of things under this Advanced Filters. And it really is probably the most powerful tool, I think, when it comes to deck building. If you're looking for suggestions, recommendations, you can really do everything you're probably looking to do in 98% of situations just by using Advanced Filters.
Yeah, Matt, this is the best deck building tool I think that exists on the entire, on all of Beyonce's internet. Like, this is the best deck building tool that is there. Like, because there are a lot of commanders where you look at them and their page is just such a mishmash. Like, Matt, you had an Alila deck, for example, and Alila is really good with artifacts and with enchantments, and it also cares about flying. Well, that's three different potential strategical directions that you could go, and the page that you're going to get is probably going to be like a third of flying matter stuff, a third of artifact matter stuff, and a third of enchantments matter stuff, and some type of fusion there. But some people would prefer to just lean into artifacts for that. So you can use the Advanced Filters tools to remove certain things. If I don't care about the flying aspect, then I can remove those cards from the filters. Or if I do specifically just want to build an actual Alila flying matters deck, then you can say, oh, I only want to see the deck data that does contain these very specific cards, like the cards that favorable winds, for example, cards that care specifically about flying creatures. Or there are going to be commanders like Atraxa, Praetor's Voice, famously so ridiculously versatile. And if you're doing stuff with super friends and you don't really care about poison, then all the poison cards that show up on Atraxa's page, like Infectious Inquiry and stuff like that, those aren't going to be useful for you. You're just like, oh, I don't really need that. So use the Advanced Filters and you can chop all of that data out, and boom, now you're getting more personally tailored recommendations that are going to be so much more convenient and useful for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much you can do with those filters. The Atraxa example is a really good Joey. But like to even, you know, get it a little more like personal, I try to tend to build decks outside the box a little bit, but even so, there's nothing you're going to build in Commander that someone else hasn't already done, right? Even if maybe it isn't super popular. So let's use my Minsk and Boo Timeless Heroes deck, for example. It's a fling deck. You know, that's not the most popular way to maybe build that deck, but like other people have done that. And so if you want to filter that down, well, you know, you could pick something like Thud and like any Minsk and Boo deck with Thud, but that might also get you some other decks that are just running Thud because it's a kind of a popular card because it's so efficient. Well, like then filter it out even further. Filter on Minsk and Boo decks with Pyrrhic Blast or something. Like, no one's running that spell in a Minsk and Boo deck unless they're specifically dedicated to do that one theme. It's like you can really eliminate everything by like filtering a deck down to something very, very narrow that's only going to show up in that very specific iteration of a deck. There's just so many things you can do. There's just no situation, I don't think, where like you can be so invested in the format where you can't drill down on EDH Rec and find someone else that's built something similar to you so you can then look at their list that kind of mirrors what your idea was.
Well, and the cool thing too, we keep talking about how you can set Advanced Filters to include a certain card that you want to make sure you're building around to help find a theme. Well, for our friends that play CEDH, you can still use EDH Rec. I know that there's a blend of social and CEDH decks that come into the database. So using advanced filters is a great way to either include or exclude CEDH from the decks that you're looking at. One very popular example that a lot of my friends that do play CEDH use is to look either with decks that are playing Mox Diamond, for example. So you just go to advanced filters and say with Mox Diamond and include that in the filter. And that's going to give you a pretty good shot of what CEDH decks are going to be playing as far as things that are going to come up with those filters. And at the same time, if they don't want any CEDH decks coming in, you can set it to include or to look at decks without Mox Diamond in there. So you're going to be looking at a commander, but filter out anything that might be in the CEDH realm. It's a super helpful tool. You know, no matter what end of the power spectrum you're trying to play, you're going to be able to get a ton of valuable insight specifically tailored to what you're trying to do just by using advanced filters. And it's just such, we can't emphasize this enough. We mention it probably every other episode.
Seriously.
But it is such powerful tool that we get asked about all the stinking time.
And this is very much not a Homerism either. Like, listen, if we all, you know, we're on the Delta Airlines podcast, yes, we're probably going to recommend Delta Airlines or something. But there, if we weren't on the Delta Airlines podcast, are we going to be that dedicated to that airline? Probably not. If I wasn't on the EDHREX staff, I would still be like hyping up how useful advanced filters are.
Yeah.
They are just, I mean, like possibly the most useful tool you can use, just full stop. That's got nothing to do with the fact that EDHREX is in our name. It's just an amazing utility.
Oh my goodness. No, it seriously is so true. Because like, I think there are a lot of folks who are just like, well, you know, not all of the recommendations that EDHREC gives you are perfect. And we're like, we know, that's the point of the podcast. We're like, right, we have this one segment called Challenge the Stats, which I'm not allowed to segue into, where we talk about how we don't agree with some of the recommendations or the ad populum suggestions that a lot of people will gravitate towards because we think that there could be better options instead that require a little bit more effort. And something like advanced filters is going to help you get there. A common thing that I do with advanced filters, I make sure that it's a deck that does include Sol Ring, because there are a lot of 1v1 commander decks out there that don't include Sol Ring. And I'm like, you know, people who aren't playing the Sol Ring in this deck, I'm pretty sure that I want to play that. Or, you know, it doesn't even have to be necessarily just something that forces you into a strategical direction. I could just be like, oh, I only want to see Conrad data for the decks that include Wake the Dead, because those people know what's up. Those are the people I'm going to have the most in common with. I want to see what other types of clever stuff that they are up to. And it doesn't stop there. If there are very expensive cards that you don't want to use, you can say, exclude those for me. There are also budget filters if you want to see just the least expensive of the decks for that commander as well. There are so many things that you can do to tailor the recommendations there, and we could talk forever about advanced filters, but oh man, yeah, they are just, they are so, so useful.
The advanced filters has as many layers as Dana has to his jokes this week. Like that's how much is going on though. Cause really you can combine all the tools that are on the commander's page too. You can look at something with the cheap budget or the expensive budget. And then you can look within a certain theme of the budget range. And then you can include the advanced filters excluding a card. So you can look at the expensive Shorokai Genesis Engine decks that are running an artifact theme deck, but aren't using Krark Clan Ironworks, for example.
Sure.
You can do all of those things. You can go as deep as you want to. And it really is a tool that it's as useful as you make it. The more time you kind of spend having fun with it and researching and digging, which we're all nerds here. We like to get nerdy and do research on things. And this is just a great way to assist you in doing that, to get you the most relevant information possible.
Absolutely. I guess, you know, to take a step back now from just the advanced filters, which again, like if you're not using them, seriously, you are missing out on the coolest part of EDHREC if you're not using them yet. Definitely go use them. But there's another FAQ that I think we got to get to. And Dana, I'm going to toss this question to you. What the heck is the synergy score all about? What in the world does that thing mean?
I'm glad you asked me that, because now I can like read and give you an exact answer. No, it's the percentage this card shows up in this commander's deck minus the percentage shows up in other commanders of that color.
Yeah, so to kind of build off what Dana laid down as the foundation of the synergy score, it's basically how unique is this card to a specific commander. So in the new Anixia Hand of Erebos decks, for example, that's the new Abzan Enchantress deck where you're caring all about enchantments, you look at some of the top played cards, so you see stuff like Sanctum Weaver is in 93% of those decks, so a ton of those decks, but it's showing an 81% synergy score, which that means only 12% of Abzan decks are actually playing Sanctum Weaver, so it's giving that 81% variance in Anixia decks versus the typical Abzan deck in general. So that's where the synergy scores come from. It's basically the delta between how much this commander plays and how much the typical commander in these colors plays any given card.
Yeah, and that's a nice way for us to see, oh, this card is a lot more uniquely synergistic to this commander as opposed to this is just a popular card in general. Like Path to Exile is going to be a popular card in general, but it's not going to necessarily have a high synergy score because there's no unique synergy going on there. It's good everywhere. If people are wondering, why don't we call it a uniqueness score in that case? I have asked, but it's not up to me. It's up to the programmers. And so that's the thing. It says what it says. Yes. So there we go. But yeah, also a big FAQ when people are asking about it. But it isn't necessarily a personal value judgment that anyone has put onto that card. There are certainly some cards that are very unique to a commander that I actually might take out of the deck because I don't think that they're necessarily that good for the commander, but they are unique to it compared to stuff that other commanders of that color are doing.
Well, and what's really cool too is it's possible to have a negative synergy score, which you don't see very often. But then when you do, especially with some of those staple type cards, Swords to Plowshares is only played in 54% of Anixia decks, for example. Well, that's a negative 7% synergy, which means 61% of decks that have white are going to be playing that card. That's a huge number. And so it kind of gives you some questions to ask yourself is why are Anixia decks playing Swords to Plowshares or Path to Exile a little bit less than the typical Abzan color deck? So it's a fun thing to kind of see, oh, well, what's going on there? And kind of dig a little bit deeper to what else are people doing in the deck as to why they might be taking out some of these staples that are some of those powerful cards in all of Magic.
Well, another one that comes up all the time is why only track data from the past 2 years instead of from all time?
Yes, we do get that question a lot. And I mean, it's just because we want to stay current. That's kind of it. I don't know about you, Dana, but the way that I built decks 2 years ago is not the same way that I build decks today. The way that I built decks when the format first began is not the same way that I build decks today. I don't necessarily think that a bunch of like data from like 2015 would be relevant to my deck building interests today, for example. There'd be a lot of, you know, removal spells that I was playing, but like Relic Crush, which was like a 5-mana kind of janky thing, I was like, I'm not playing that anymore. So that data, having that be like eternalized within the data, I feel like would just have probably had a bit more undue influence on like the stuff that we, I mean, the products come out so fast these days.
Yes.
Like stuff gets old immediately. We'd like to have at least some amount of window in order for it to feel like we're actually staying a little bit fresh.
And to like give you a real world example of this, you know, say 8 years ago or so, if you were, you know, building an Orzhov deck or something, the cards Mortify and the cards Vindicate were probably some of the most popular cards that you could run in that color pair. The ability to hit, you know, multiple different permanent types was a super useful, huge removal thing to have access to.
Yeah.
And so I would dare say almost every Orzhov deck from that point prior probably had those on the list. Mm. Well, since then, there's been a gazillion Orzhov removal spells printed, whether it's, you know, Utter End or Anguished Unmaking or
Despark.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Generous Gift. You know, Black's had a bunch of creature removal spells that are printed as well. Most of those cards printed since then are probably better than Vindicate and are probably better than Mortify. But those cards were so popular and there were so few entries and options at the time that those would still show up looking very, very popular if we kept all that data from back in the day.
Right.
So you would look at that list of like most popular removal options in Orzhov and see two cards that nobody really brewing today would be using. But because the data was so old, it would look like they were very popular cards because they would be in, you know, 5 or 10,000 decks or something from back in, you know, 2013.
Yeah, it's kind of like you wouldn't go to your doctor and be like, well, I get headaches kind of often. How would you have treated that back in the 1950s? And then you find
right.
out
it's, yeah.
then
yeah.
you find out that the medication they would give you is used for like horse dewormer. You don't want to do that.
Oh, no.
You want to know what's being done today. So like Joey hinted, there are so many sets coming out. There are more sets that have come out in the past 2 years than the past 30 years because that's just the rate of release. And so we want to keep everything current. It's really a novelty more than anything to keep track of decks that haven't been touched in over 2 years because right. they're just, we talk about flaws in the data. Well, keeping that 2 year window is one of the ways that we use to keep out one of those flaws where we're getting aged data that isn't relevant to how the game is in 2023. And that was a big move that I remember it felt a little controversial in the community. And we were kind of like, well, this is a good thing. We're trying to help you more.
No, change is bad, Matt. All change is bad,
Matt. It is.
But no, that does feed into some, like, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, again, we are aware of the fact that the data on the EDH rec is not the perfect. Again, that's why we have a segment called Challenge the Stats that Matt's going right. to steal a segue from.
That's the whole point of the show. It's the whole point of the show, not just the segment.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, if there are cards that are just looming very popularly because of the fact that they are very popular and you're sort of getting, like, cyclical recommendations, that would be kind of an issue. And the two-year window is one of those things that is kind of helpful to be like, oh no, these cards are still popular after all of these years, which probably informs at least a little bit that they have maintained some amount of like, no, they actually are pretty decent though. Which is just, you know, an important thing to note. Like, we are aware that there are certain ways that, like, the fact that a card is popular might mean that more people go to try and play that card because they saw it was popular, even though it isn't necessarily good. That was literally the premise of our very first episode on the podcast, you know? Yeah. But I do think that certain tools like advanced filters or like this time window is one of those things that can help make sure that the recommendations that we're getting are still at least a little bit more current than they were before, so that those things that loom don't loom eternally.
Well, and for another real world example of that, we'll just give you three right now cards that we don't agree with how popular or unpopular they are on EDH Rec.
Wow, Dana. Are you talking about that segment I've hinted at called Challenge the Stats?
There was a lot of openings there that I was shocked you didn't jump on.
Well, because I'm having fun talking about the website I work for, man.
Joey, we're trying to let you do what you say you want to do. Right. I'm starting to think you don't want to segue into Challenge the Stats.
I knew it was going to be stolen. Like, it's fine. I thought it would be Matt to do the deed.
Joey not doing the segue is almost like the dad jokes. Like, it started off as like a joke that happened once or twice.
Right, yeah.
It's just part of the show now. It's just our identity.
I've just resigned myself to this fate. I've just the mental burden of trying to prepare. Let's move on to the next thing. I've just abdicated that throne completely. So I'm just not even worrying about it.
It truly is the best deck building feature on the website is Joey not doing a segue. That's an essential deck building tool.
It sucks because I thought I was foreshadowing it because it was just like, which Matt's going to steal the segue, and Matt wasn't the one to do it. So I'm like, dang it. Okay. Yeah. Let's challenge some dang stats. All right. Let's take a quick break and come back with those.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As someone who's been a longtime fan of Glissa the Trader, and it's a deck that I recently converted to Glissa Sunslayer, I decided, what the heck, I'm just going to build every Glissa deck, just because why not?
What? Yeah, you make that sound so casual. That sounds like a lot, actually.
There's only four of them so far. That's not that bad.
Only four.
So the third of the four, and the most recent, Glissa Herald of Predation, I started putting the deck together, and I'm not doing anything too crazy with it. I'm just building it as an incubate deck. It's going to be relatively low powered, but as I'm going through EDH Rec, one card caught my eye that's showing up in about 20% of the decks, and that's probably more than it should be in, because in my playtesting, I realized I had also included it, and it probably shouldn't be there, and that's Second Harvest. Hmm. Second Harvest is a very good card that shows up in a lot of decks that have tokens, and this Glissa deck does indeed make tokens. It's 2 and green for an instant. For each token you control, create a token that's a copy of that permanent. The problem in this particular deck is the way Incubate works. It becomes a 0/0 creature, and if there's no counters on that token,
oh no,
it just dies instantly.
Oh no!
And when you copy a incubate token that has counters on it, you're not getting those tokens. Now some percentage of Glissa decks are kind of running a little bit of an Aristocrats thing, so they have Mirkwood Bats in there and Agent of the Iron Throne. So some of those decks are probably doing that intentionally. They're perfectly okay with those tokens dying the second they turn into creatures, because that's going to, you know, give you that Mirkwood Bats trigger or the Asian Iron Throne trigger. But looking at the list, 20-some% of those decks, that's a relatively small sliver of Glissa Herald of Predation decks that are probably building it that way. I think people are just not entirely aware that Second Harvest doesn't really work the way they want it to work in that particular deck. So unless you are building it with the intention of those tokens dying the second they turn into creatures, Second Harvest probably really isn't going to work as well as you think it's going to work in that deck.
Love it. That's a very, very good catch. Man, those poor tokens. You make them and immediately poof. Oh, no. Yeah. All right. That's excellent. I'll move to my challenge now. And I am going to do yet another throwback to our very first episode where we were talking about the precon effect that we sometimes see in the data on EDH Rec, where when folks upload a deck list, it'll probably be, you know, EDH Rec does not pull exact duplicates from any deck building website, and it also does not pull exact precon deck lists. But when things are a couple of cards switched off from a precon, you know, someone's like swapped out 10 cards and put their deck list online, there are probably going to be a couple of cards in that deck that wouldn't necessarily be there if you had been building it from scratch, but they're just sort of holdovers from the precon. And that's what I want to talk about with my challenge here for Captain Nagathrod and the card In Garrick's Wake. In Garrick's Wake, very cool card. It's a 9-mana destroy all creatures you don't control and all planeswalkers you don't control. It's currently showing up in a third of Captain Nagathrod decks, presumably because it was in the Captain Nagathrod precon. But this is not the board wipe that I think people want it to be. 9 mana's kind of a lot, so I would put this forward as a challenge. Maybe use something more like Deadly Tempest. There are a lot of other cheaper and easier to cast different board wipes out there that you should probably be using instead of this one. Cool card, but deeply not a reliable one. So I'm going to put forward that one as an overplayed challenge.
I mean, reliability does play a big factor. And I have a challenge that actually was submitted by a listener that is pretty reliable in keeping the board clear. So one of our listeners, Xander Jones, sent us an email, which you can do, edhreccast@gmail.com, and had a pretty interesting challenge for Prosper Tomebound. Now, Prosper is number 9 in the past 2 years as far as most built commander. So Dana, you can just stop paying attention now. So Xander sent us an email and said that they wanted to challenge the card Street Urchin in Prosper Tomebound decks. So Street Urchin is one of those backgrounds, one of our favorite types of cards in the past couple years. It's 1 and a red for a legendary enchantment background that says commander creatures you own have pay 1 mana and sacrifice another creature or an artifact, and this creature deals 1 damage to any target. So they talk about how, well, it's just easy to make a bunch of treasure tokens. It's easy to have just a lot of mana floating around too with Prosper, because of Prosper's ability to, whenever you play a card from exile, you create a treasure token, which means you have mana and you have artifacts to sacrifice to trigger Street Urchin quite a bit. And it's better than a lot of other options that are being played in the deck. Over 11% of decks are playing Viridian Longbow, for example. Well, you don't have to worry about equipping this because Street Urchin is an enchantment, so it's also a little bit harder to remove. You can do it the turn Prosper comes down, and there's many other reasons to really like Street Urchin. So if you're looking for a replacement, for example, for Viridian Longbow, I think Street Urchin is a great option. Or if you just want a way to key in on Prosper's Death Touch ability, which I don't think Prosper really needed Death Touch to be as popular as it is. It's kind of like one of those cards that Dana talks about, like Ward 2 was just stapled on a bunch of legendary creatures in the Lord of the Rings set. Death Touch feels the same way with Prosper. It doesn't really matter, but Street Urchin is a way to capitalize on having that just tacked on ability. So Just pay one mana, sacrifice a treasure, ping a big scary creature, kill it right away. It's just a great challenge. It's not being played on the page at all for Prosper. So this is a great way, and there's already a card that we already see with Viridian Longbow, over 11% of decks. So I like this challenge. This is a good catch. So Xander, thanks for sending us the email, and hopefully everyone else sends an email in the future to send us some challenges like this, because this was a good call.
Yeah, that's just terrifying synergy. Just like Prosper can just like down the entire table. Just like, yes. Oh yeah, I've got removal at instant speed at a moment's notice just because my commander happens to be here doing the thing it was already doing. Terrifying. Dana, as a person who plays Glissa, a bunch of Death Touch stuff, I'm sure this is a thing to which you can relate, even if it frustrates you to have something relatable to a very popular commander.
Absolutely. It is... Pricky, if you paired up with Thornbite Staff, you just mow down the entire board. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. A lot of really tricky stuff that you can do when your commander has native Death Touch. Like, that's absolutely ridiculous. Okay, so we talked a lot about EDH Rec as, you know, the main, like, here's a bunch of really cool tools on the website proper, but that is by no means the only deck building tool that we use. Matt, I'm going to pass the ball to you again, because I am sure that there's another website that we all know and love that you would love to gush about.
I would, and this is a website I talk about pretty often. When people go to patreon.com/EDHRecCast and join the Discord, a lot of folks will sometimes ask me, well, what is your favorite tool to use? Like, surely it's EDHREC because you work for EDHREC, you do their podcast. I actually use Scryfall more than anything. That's probably the most commonly used and first site I visit when it comes to building decks. I absolutely love Scryfall just with the way that I build. I kind of have an idea in the back of my head. So I also go to Advanced Search, similar to Advanced Filters, for EDHREC on Scryfall, and you are able to customize so many fields. We talk about Gatherer back in 2012 being just a database of knowledge. Scryfall is the best way to just navigate everything about Magic, whether it's details on cards, all sorts of different things. You can find so much information on Scryfall. I absolutely love it. And EDHREC, it's great for looking at information that is in a certain subset of those decks. But if you're looking just for anything out there as far as Magic cards in general, Scryfall is probably the most powerful tool out there. It's wild to me how great Scryfall is. And if you want to talk about a tool that is what you make of it, I know nothing about syntaxes and programming and coding, but I learned so much because of Scryfall, just with their search tools.
Yeah. The way that you can organize, like, searching through Oracle text, or that you can say, oh, I only want to see, like, my commander deck is going to be within this color identity, so I only want to see cards within that color identity. Like, there is so much going on that site. It's so good.
Well, to talk about Glissa again, because, like, this is when I most recently was using Scryfall.
Are you, like, a Glissa salesman? What's going on?
I guess. I'm trying to get everybody on Team Glissa. The original mono green Glissa, I was trying to figure out, okay, I want probably some theme for the creatures in the deck. So, like, what can I do? And, well, how about what green creatures have the words, since Glissa destroys artifacts, have the words destroy an artifact? And it's like, well, I can filter down for that and find the, you know, 30 different green creatures I could include if I wanted to run a deck that, like, just has creatures that do variants and artifact destruction. Like, okay, I'll maybe make a wild pair deck and I want, like, every creature with a combined power and toughness equal to 7 or 8 or something. Mm-hmm. So I did that kind of filter. Like, I wound up doing like 4 or 5 different filters that had nothing to do with one another and gave me an entire different creature set. But that's what I wanted to do, right? Like, there's no other way I can do that kind of, I can pull that kind of a data set online aside from Scryfall.
Yeah, absolutely. There are also, like, things with mana value. Like, I've got that Babala Saga deck, which I know I never shut up about, but that's a very low to the ground deck because I don't know if y'all know this, but I eat a lot of my own lands when I'm playing that Babala Saga deck. And so not only was Scryfall a useful tool for me to find cards that have multiple types, like this is an enchantment and a land, or this is an artifact and a creature, or things like that, but also it was helpful for me to find some stuff where I could limit the exact mana cost of stuff that was going to appear, because that deck is just not able to play 6 drops with any degree of regularity. I have to be very, very selective about the ones that I'm going to actually use in that deck. So there are all these small things that are just wonderful that you can manipulate and change your and stuff. And so Scryfall loves us. We love Scryfall. This is an absolutely wonderful tool. You know, even going past that, Matt, you mentioned with the syntax on search terms, mm-hmm. The thing that I love was the negative syntax. Like, if I wanted to see, oh, you know, type is creature or whatever, then I'd be able to plug that in. But I can also do negative type to on creature, and then I won't see any creatures in the results and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, that's so easy for me to eliminate stuff too. Like, it is just, it's so great.
Yeah, and it's kind of just silly to me how specific you can get. You know, if you're looking for things with a specific mana cost. So say you're building a Niv-Mizzet Reborn and you're trying to find all the cards for any given guild color, like casting cost, you can search by specific, even hybrid casting costs. Mm-hmm. It's so, so wild, and just how deep you can get. It's such a powerful tool. It can be a little intimidating to be completely honest about it. If you don't know really a whole lot, your searches are going to be pretty simple, but when you start kind of making observations between like, okay, I'm going to use the advanced search to find these parameters that I want, and you see the syntaxes at the top when you are looking at the results, It's truly a wealth of knowledge. And even better, one question that we get a whole lot too is, well, I like Scryfall, but it doesn't really present a whole lot of information that's helpful to me. You can then just sort and look at the dropdown and sort by so many different ways there too. You can sort by EDH rec rank. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at a specific subset of cards and you want to see what the most popular cards are in that subset of search parameters, you can then filter by EDH rec cards and see what's the most popular that people are playing within that search. And it's such a fantastic tool. I'm a Scryfall homer. Like, I'm a brand loyalist, sometimes to a fault, but Scryfall is one if they ever break my heart, it's going to be so hard to let them go.
Well, and one more thing that I love is also that there are people working at Scryfall who will tag things in, for example, the art of cards. Mm-hmm. So you can also do things like lore : Gandalf or whatever, or like art : Frodo, for example. And that will also pull up different things like, or art : glasses or something like that. And you might be able to find here a bunch of cards that have been tagged with glasses in the artwork of the character, or where Frodo is present on the card in some fashion. And so that's going to be another thing that, like, if other deck building tools are not necessarily going to help you build a flavor deck, Scryfall is going to help you with building a flavor deck just by searching lore and art. That's so nifty.
The next thing I think I probably go to a lot are just deck building websites, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of reasons. Number one, there's just so much information to keep track of. I feel like these days you just need to have your deck list somewhere online. Obviously, we have a little more demand than most people to share our deck list with people.
Yeah.
So there's that need. But like, even if I wasn't a content creator, I would 100% be using a deck building website just to keep track of like my own lists and being able to differentiate which of the four Glissa decks I'm running what cards in. But like, even beyond absurdities like that, it's just really, really useful to be able to look at that deck and kind of glance at it and quick glance like, oh, this is how many removal spells I'm running. Oh, this is how much draw I'm running. That deck felt light on draw. Let me bring it up. Yeah, it kind of is light on draw. Let me find a way to add a spell. Like it's a super useful resource both to just get a feel for your deck and also to look at other people's specific iterations of that commander. Okay, someone else who has built this commander, what does their list look like compared to mine? And that's a great way to get ideas, I think.
Yeah. Specifically, I think the ones that we'll shout out here are going to be Archidect and Moxfield are two enormously influential and just like pioneers of doing stuff that is cool with deck building websites, whether it's like going to be their playtester or their compare decks feature, having packages or having like Archidect, for instance, has like you can actually get EDH rec recommendations while you are building your deck, which is just so neat. And they're like, you can save certain packages of cards. For example, I know a lot of competitive players like to have, oh, I know that this is going to be like my ad nauseum package or my tutor package or something like that. And know that that's especially something that Moxfield became famous for. Like, here's something that you can automatically include that doesn't take a whole lot of time to add individual card by individual card. So both of those websites have a bunch of very useful tools. Mm-hmm. In addition to when you're looking at other people's decks, when you're building your own, there are so many cool things that you can do on there too.
Yeah, and that's not to discount either the other websites that we pulled data from, AetherHub, DeckStats, and Goldfish. Those all have done a great job of kind of paving the way. But yeah, we are three individuals. And personally, I mean, Archidect and Moxfield just head and shoulders above the rest of the field. Just the way that obviously Archidect having the EDH rec integration, Just having everything fed into that in real time, you're able to see so much information. And Moxfield, I love their visual layout. That's just one thing that it helps me keep track of everything as I'm brewing. I currently keep up both of my deck lists pretty much on Architect and Moxfield exclusively at this point, but I also have them both up to date at the same time because I use both sites for different reasons. And so whatever you get the most value from, pretty much every deck building site out there is going to have some sort of feature that's going to help you keep track of your decks, like Dana mentioned, but also keep track of everything that you're going along. You know, you want to brainstorm a bunch of ideas. Well, you need a place to keep track of those. And decks have come a long way in between, you know, when Dana was sending smoke signals for however many cards they were playing, or I was sending emails over lunch to my buddies. There's just so much amazing tools just out there that you can use to help your deck building abilities.
Absolutely. And Dana, you mentioned how much you enjoy looking through individual deck lists. To again go back to a cool feature of EDH Rec, if you look at any commander's page, you can see them in a bunch of different variations. You can see them as a commander, you can see them as a card in the 99. You can also click the average deck button, which is going to give you, here's just like us compiling all of the stuff. Oh, that we see that there's usually like 33 artifacts in whatever deck, and so we're going to take the top 33 artifacts and boom, we're going to compile it all into this average deck list for that commander. Those are all very, very useful. But there's also the decks page on EDH Rec, which will take you to the individual deck lists that are out there, and you can view individual deck lists directly from EDH Rec, and that will take you to one of those places. That will take you to Architect or Moxfield or to Goldfish or whatever. And you can also sort those deck lists in a bunch of different ways too. And so that's a nice integration for those websites directly on EDH Rec. If you want to start looking at individual deck lists to get some specific inspiration, that is going to also help you out quite a lot.
Well, and I think it's worth noting here too that like that kind of happens automatically in terms of the decks being uploaded to EDH Rec. That's a question I've been asked before about how do you upload your deck onto the website. Mm. It just happens. Like if your deck list is out there on one of these sites, that data is being brought up to EDH Rec. You don't have to actually do anything at all to have that happen. You know, even like, you know, Matt's email deck list, like we're reading your email.
That is not true at all. Please.
That might not be. That feature hasn't been released yet. We haven't announced that.
The federal government requires me to say that is not what we do at all. We are not surveilling your emails, just the ones that you send to edhrecast@gmail.com.
Oh, goodness.
Those are the only emails we read.
Yeah, no. Okay, so to actually clarify exactly what Dan is saying here, though, like if a deck is public and commander legal, like it's not accidentally over the card limit, or it doesn't have like accidentally a silver bordered card or a banned card in there or something, then yes, it is automatically scraped. And if you've got an old deck list that is more than 2 years old, for example, and then you update it this month or whatever, well, now that's falling in within our, you know, that's in our 2 year window. And so then that will also automatically be scraped as well. And it's a daily scrape thing going on there. So Dana, I appreciate your jokes there, but I do want to clarify the actual automaticness that is going on there. Like there are some parameters that gotta be there.
Yes, we are not the NSA. We are not reading your emails yet.
Don't hint at that. There are people who don't know the sarcasm. Like
that's very.
I'm gonna move us on to another question that we get a lot, if that's okay with you guys, because I don't want to incriminate ourselves.
For real.
So one thing that we do get asked
plausible deniability. Good, Matt.
Oh
good.
My gosh. I know we like stealing segues, but I'm trying to do it for our own good here.
Yeah, for real.
This is for our own protection, Dana. But anyways, so one question that we do get asked quite a bit is. We get asked about the salt scores, and it's not just because we do them, because that is something that we like to do about every year or so. Is what we'll do is we'll put up a poll, and everybody can go to the salt score ranking, and you just see a card, and you get to give it a salt score ranking of how salty does this make you feel? Do you like this card? Do you not like this card? Just what's a gut reaction? We give those all scores, and we note them on the website. But people have asked, what about a sugar score or a sweetness score? Mm. And that's something that... I get the motivation for wanting to know something like that, but also, honestly, and you guys might disagree, I don't think that would be really as useful as folks think that it would be. It sounds like a nice idea in theory, but I really don't know if it's going to be helpful, I guess.
I am 1,000% with you. Yeah. Okay.
Which, I'm not alone. Good.
Yeah. Well, no, like that is actually one of the reasons that we've all felt not nearly as motivated. Like the salt scores are, I think, very useful as a quick thing for people to see. Oh, Vorinclex has a salt score of 2.6 at the current time. What does that mean? Well, it means that this is probably one of those cards that you might want to warn people about at like during a pregame discussion. This is the kind of card that some people will be like about, and to avoid any surprise in your games, it can be useful for you to alert people like, hey, my deck runs a Vorinclex, my deck runs an Expropriate, my deck runs a Winter Orb or stuff like that. Those are cards that people feel a certain type of way about. And so a heads up is useful, and that can help smooth out the game that is about to happen when you sit down to play with someone.
Mm-hmm.
So that is to me the utility of the salt scores. A sugar score, as in like I like playing against these cards, is a thing that we have had questions about. And I just think that if we were to do sugar scores, they would all devolve into here's a bunch of group hug cards that people like. Like, oh yeah, I like playing against Rites of Flourishing because I get to draw extra cards, is kind of the thing that I think it would end up devolving into. And that's not nearly as useful when I'm trying to build a deck to see what the social response will be to it. Like, this doesn't tell me anything useful.
I think it's easier to kind of think of when you take it from the perspective of it's a social format. We're playing with three other people instead of just one other person. What are the cards that take away from that social aspect? And that's where the salt scores come from, is you look at them and they're all pretty antisocial cards as far as like they take away from the general enjoyment of any typical game. Cards that contribute to that, that would just be never ending, because it basically you take anything on the salt score and everything else is on the sugar score. And, yeah. And that's just, it's not, it's like when sometimes people ask us, well, we want to see like cards that people aren't playing. And well, that's
a lot.
You can quantify, like just from a math point of view, you can quantify things that people are doing, but it's so much harder to quantify things that people aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the tens of thousands of cards that are not being played
regularly
because they're all draft draft. Yeah. It's that is an overwhelming and not useful amount, unfortunately.
And sometimes it's easier to tell. Like sometimes you can tell people aren't brushing their teeth, and it's pretty obvious. Well, like there's a reason that they're not doing that, and it's because they're gross. that's what they're asking for. Like people don't play Spark Jolt for a reason, because it's gross. And I like Spark Jolt, but I'm also not going to play it.
Matt, I'll have you know that Spark Jolt is showing up in 7.5% of Obnixilus Captive Kingpin decks. So some people like it. No, I'm absolutely being facetious.
Well, 7% right now of Obnixilus players are not brushing their teeth. They need to go see the dentist ASAP.
So one of the most popular ways to close out games, particularly at higher power levels, is combos.
Mm.
But that's kind of the thing that you really only know if you've been playing forever and have those in your head. It's kind of a tricky thing to know what combos work in a deck unless you go to one of the better resources for that.
Dana, are you possibly segueing us into the last thing that we wanted to discuss here?
Yes, I am.
A nice way to close out games and to close out the show. How fancy of you. I see what you're doing here. Yeah. If you like combos in your Commander decks, there is a website called Commander Spellbook that we want to shout out here too. It also is integrated with EDHREC. But yeah, this is a way that you can just go look up combos. You can search up a card and it will show you here are all of the combos that exist with that card. If you want to see what Basalt Monolith is up to, then you can search that up and boom, here's all the things that it can do. And not only will it show you all of the things that that can do, you can also search up commanders and see if they combo with anything. You can search up specific color combinations that you want to combo within. And it will also tell you what the end result of that combo is, whether it's giving you infinite mill, infinite life, infinite tokens, infinite whatever. Those are also very, very useful things. And you can search by the desired result. Hi, I want a combo that will find me infinite life. Go, and boom. And so that is another very, very useful tool to use as well. Commander Spellbook, give that a look too, if that's the way that you want to end out some of those games.
Well, and one thing that, Joey, I appreciate you covering Spellbook, but there's one aspect that I've actually used the most, and it's a Find My Combos section in there. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is you can go to your favorite deck building website, whatever you're using, export that deck list and paste it into the Find My Combos page on Spellbook, and it's going to tell you what combos happen to exist in that deck. And that's a great way to do a little bit of extra research and maybe you don't want to stumble onto something mid-game. I have done that before where I found a non-infinite combo, but it was a way to get all of my lands that have a basic lands type on there. It was a Perilous Forays combo in my Omnath Locus of Rage deck. Well, that would have helped me not do that mid game where I'm peeling everything out. I'm like, oh, I can just do this as much as I want and you're all dead. And that's not really a kind of weird moment that I want to put myself in too often. So I have found the Find My Combos page on Spellbook is extremely helpful to prevent you from accidentally oopsing into one of those moments where you discover an infinite combo when you didn't really want to be doing that.
That's a really good point. It's sort of like how, I mean, we've all said before that half the time when we're using EDH Rec, it's to see what the popular thing is so that we can avoid doing the popular thing.
Sure.
That yes. is like that is a thing that we've used this website for and for Commander Spellbook. If combos are a thing you want to avoid, it's also still useful there. That's a great point to bring up. I love that.
To bring it back to EDH Rec a little bit, whenever you look up your commander in EDH Rec, there is a button you can click on to just see what the most popular combos are for that commander. If you just want to get like a high level look at it, whether it's to add them or to avoid them, there's a really simple way to find those for your commander.
Absolutely. I would say be wary of using it on Gave Guru of Spores page, though, because it's probably just going to be oops all combos when it comes to that particular commander. But yeah, that is also a nice thing there. Again, like the integration of all of these tools working with each other is something that I think is really refreshing and fun.
So the last kind of question I have before we segue on out of here tonight, are there any kind of small tips or tools or things we didn't talk about that you guys like when it comes to like making your decks better or for brewing or building?
Hmm.
I guess I can start us off here. I like reading what smart people have to say, particularly if they're article writers. And there's a ton of places beyond just EDH Rec that have smart commander people that are writing articles on a weekly or even daily basis in some cases. If there's somebody that you found a connection to, particularly if they're a writer, read their articles. Like maybe not everyone they read, but like give them a glance. You can usually read a well-written EDH article in 5 minutes. It's worth the time a lot of times, I think, not necessarily to get a specific card, but to just get an idea of how that person's brain works with regards to, deck brewing, card evaluation, that kind of thing. Just getting those insights might not help you there, but like it'll help you 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 6 months down the road. Just understanding their insight might change how you see things. So that's a big thing I'm a fan of that maybe isn't super specific in terms of like a website or thing you can do, but at a higher level, I am a big fan of reading articles from people that whose opinions I value and whose thought process I find to be interesting.
Reading Benny Smith's articles is something I'm always going to advocate for. Just Benny's knowledge, just over the years of writing so many articles, there's a lot of wisdom in there too. Not just knowledge, but wisdom. Mm-hmm. Not just knowing how to do it, but when to do it and all those kind of just fun little nuances. Benny's a great friend of the podcast. I love reading Benny's articles. That was one reason I got into content in general. Hmm. But yes, reading articles is absolutely a fantastic tool. Everybody knows for the most part how they like to build decks, but seeing other people's perspectives and going through that process is super, super valuable. I think that's one thing that folks maybe take for granted every now and then.
One that I'll throw out there is Judge Chat.
Oh yeah. That's a real good one.
I think specifically it is chat.magicjudges.org/mtgrules. That is a very invaluable tool for like when you're in the middle of the game and something comes up where you're just like, wait, how is this card interaction supposed to work? Or when you were in the process of deck building and you're like, does this work the way that I think it does? Or is the timing not exactly like that is a huge community of very, very thoughtful and very attentive judges who can tell you straight up, no, this is how that specific ruling works. Or yes, that is indeed how things work. And they can refer you to a specific ruling on why or the philosophy behind that rule to explain why. That way you don't accidentally catch yourself in, oh, I didn't realize that this is actually a non-bow in my deck. Or you can figure it out pretty quickly, like within a game, like, oh, here's how we're supposed to resolve it. So that is another one that I would say is also like high key, just like judges are the most valuable pillars of the community in general, but it can also be a thing that you use if you're trying to make sure that you don't have any accidental non-bows in your deck. That can also be a potential resource to use there too, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever brought up Judge Chat before on this show, which is kind of surprising because it's the kind of thing, I mean, I use it maybe weekly. Hmm. I play a lot of games and like something will come up where I'll just like, just give me a sec, let me check with Judge Chat on this. Yeah, amazing resource. Absolutely one that definitely should get a little more attention.
Magic is complicated.
Like, yeah.
This is the most complicated way to play the game, I think. Like, yeah. Vintage and all that stuff is just like, oh, that's going to be a whole lot of like very intense magic. But the rules tend to be pretty straightforward, and like this is how Lightning Bolt does the thing in that format or whatever. I don't know the cards in Vintage, but in Commander it's a bunch of cards doing things we've never seen happen before. So like I think even more judge questions would happen in a game of Commander than in a game of Vintage. And so yeah, this is a complex way to play, and that can be a nice way to smooth things out and simplify things to make sure that your deck is actually humming the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, the game is so deeply, deeply complex. It can be very, very hard to keep up with all the interactions. And I mean, whenever we stream at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast, we'll catch ourselves in the middle of a game and like, well, let's just pause real quick and double check with judge chat. Or sometimes the chat on the stream also is able to help. Sometimes judges meander their way into the chat, which we super appreciate too, because it's such a massive, massive game. There's how many thousands and tens of thousands of cards these days. Mm-hmm. Knowing how every single card interacts, I mean, that's why there's levels of judges, because not just do judges typically know this, but sometimes you need to study more to be more reliable with all these just wild interactions that you come across.
Well, but Matt, you make content about Magic the Gathering. Shouldn't you know all of the rules and all of the card interactions?
Nope. I've messed up a lot of different interactions before. I'm going to mess them up in the future. Get used to it, Joey. That's what I'm going to say.
I am being facetious, obviously, but like that is actually probably an axe that I don't know if I've ever like ground before here on the show, but there are folks who are just like, oh, well, like people on the Commander Advisor group don't know all the rules. What's up with that? And it's just like, honey, calm down. Like, knowing all of the rules is not the most valuable skill that someone can have to give input on the health of a format. I'm probably a bit of a side note, but like, yeah, that is the value of that judges are bringing, is that intense knowledge, because it's freaking difficult to get to that point. So that's what I'm trying to convey there, is just like, thank you, judges, for all of that. Wah!
Well, and I remember watching a stream one time, and it was one of the Magic streams. It was a weekly something or other. And Matt Tabak, who was the rules manager at the time, was talking about some weird interaction of a new mechanic, and he sat there and they asked him a question. He kind of looked around and was like, I think we decided on this. It's the fact that like the person who decides how the rules work said, I think we did this. That should tell you that this game has a lot going on there. And so nobody's ever going to get it all right. Mistakes are going to happen. Sometimes it happens on a recording or on a game that you're watching. You cannot say it hasn't happened to you. That's just how the game works.
Precisely. And that is one of those things that like all of these tools can be so useful for, is to help you find the smoothest way through, or see what people are doing that you don't want to do, or stuff like that. And every single one of these tools is going to be helpful for you to tailor recommendations more closely to you, for you to find the combos that you do or that you don't want to use, be able to check out what other folks are up to. Like there are so many brilliant things that the community has created to sustain itself. And that... I don't know. I just like talking about all these tools, like, oh, yeah, academically, I'm just like, ooh, this is very fascinating, isn't it? But like emotionally, I'm just like, this is so neat, you guys. Like, so like, that's just kind of where I'm at the end of this episode, is like, dang, we've got some clever people in the Magic the Gathering community doing some clever stuff. And that's so rad.
If you ever have like a super complicated question like that, too, you can just type it up in your email and like, you know, we can just read it, because we read
Dana. No,
we are still not reading emails, folks.
That's right. We're not reading emails. That's
you
right.
have to Sorry. Click send first. If you want to put it into an email, if you do want us to read it, put into the to or the recipient
send
section
it to us.
EDHRecCast@gmail.com. We would love to read your emails if you send it to us first.
That's right.
And give us consent to read. Yes.
Send it to us. Yep.
Dana, stop doing finger quotes in the air. Like that's not Dana. Oh man. And besides, Dana, because you made this joke about Matt's emails, but those emails are more than 2 years old, so they fall outside
of the
window.
That's true. Fair enough.
I guess I won't get elected to the rules committee because of my email, so that's just how it's got to be.
We are closing the episode down for our own protection. Matt, if folks for some reason wanted to get in touch with you, probably not via email, where is it that they could find you?
Well, you can find my two-year-old tweets or social media comments, whatever it is. Pretty much any platform you want. It's Mathemus55 is the username at pretty much wherever it is. And don't forget, we do stream over at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. We have guests on, and it's always a fun time, playing lots of games, playing lots of Magic. So make sure you tune in for that as well.
And Dana.
You can find me online at Dana Roach. I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us together at patreon.com/idiotrekcast.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me somewhere online at Joseph M. Schultz, preferably not reading my old emails. And you can again find the cast at idiotrekcast on the onlines. And if you've got a question, you can send it to us at idiotrekcast@gmail.com. But if it's more than 2 years old, we probably won't read it. Our thanks go out once again to Chase for assisting me with the post-production of the show. You can find them online at Mana Curves. And listeners, we'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until next time, remember, EDH, wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.